Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I am Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Rob?
Today, Russell, I am feeling moody. M-O-O-D-Y. Yes, moody, which is obviously a state that I am often in. And today's guest has inspired this feeling I have, this very deep feeling, because it's not only the title of one of her recent hit songs, but for the past almost 2 years, we've been meaning to record this episode of Talk Art. She's one of my favorite people on earth. She's a close friend and a major, major hero, and basically the person I turn to for all wisdom. Through her music, through everything she does, she writes poetry, she's working on her first book. She even composes film and theatre scores like Jodie Comer's forthcoming Broadway play, Prima Facie, and Dolly Alderton's Everything I Know About Love on BBC currently. She also makes ceramics, which is a very secret side to her life that I don't know if everybody knows, but I'm a massive, massive fan. And about a year and a half ago, when she first finished her album Prioritize Pleasure, I was lucky enough to have it about 4 months before it came out. And I think I've listened to it every day since. And I just cannot stop listening to it. I never tire of it. I love it so much, and it's literally my favorite album since listening to Hounds of Love by Kate Bush. I remember saying to Rebecca, not since Peter Gabriel and Kate Bush has anyone made an album this good. I was so excited because we were meant to do an interview early on to try and promote the album, but we all got COVID so many times and it just kept getting delayed. In the meantime, she has become a global icon. She's constantly touring and the whole world is now singing her songs along with her at concerts such as the Brit Awards and Glastonbury and numerous festivals. And we even did Kite Festival together on the same lineup last month. So we would like to welcome to Talk Art our dear friend and pop goddess,
Self-esteem.
Oh my God, yay! I'm here. We did it.
So
it's been a bloody nightmare, hasn't it? Sorry.
It's all of our fault. Let's all take responsibility.
Oh, no, because I got COVID, you got COVID, he got COVID.
Yeah,
like, that the amount of times we've had to cancel this.
Yeah.
But we're here now.
We're here.
So self-esteem, was that your christening name? Or?
Mrs. Self. My name's Rebecca Lucy Taylor, and now I think, I should have called it that. But anyway, too late. Self-esteem is my... I always thought it would be a good, cool band name. And when I started doing solo stuff, it felt less severe to the band I was in if I called it like a project name. So it's called that. But it's cool. The Rebecca Taylor era can, you know, come later when I'm laying on a piano in a dress and can't be asked to dance.
Do people come up to you and say, self-esteem, can I have a picture? As if it's too selfish, your first name, esteem's your last name.
Yeah, I get it a lot, yeah. And they're like, what, is it an alter ego? And I'm like, not really.
It's not Sasha Fierce.
No, I wish it was. I wish, like, I could compartmentalise like that, but all of this horror is all me.
Is there anything in calling yourself self-esteem that it helps your self-esteem? Has it giving you agency?
Yeah, that's the thing. The long process that, and I say this a lot now, like, I didn't have any self-esteem. I just, sex appeal and self-esteem, I thought were cool band names. I spent my 20s being like, I hate myself. That was my whole vibe. No idea that, like, loving yourself is the actual only answer to, like, any type of happiness that you dream of. And then going solo, having agency, have been being allowed to create completely by myself and not have someone else's opinion every time, has given me self-love, validation and self-esteem, and I'm like, That's funny. And my joke is I'm calling my next band Loads of Money.
I remember when I first heard I Do This All the Time, the lead single off of this last album, and I was just totally floored. And I was at the flat of Lindsay Mendick and Guy Oliver, two artists that are very close friends of yours and live in Margate. And we were listening to the song and I was just like, can you play it again? Because I couldn't quite believe some of the words. And I weirdly felt quite seen. And like, I felt like, it was almost like going back to, you know, in the 90s when Alanis Morissette came out.
Jagged Little Pill
came out. And you have a record that the words mean so much to you. Even if at that age I probably wasn't totally experiencing a lot of those feelings. Just the angst, the honesty. Like, what's it actually been like seeing the response to that record? Because I remember playing it in my house in Margate really loud before it had come out. And you walked down the street and I saw you through the window.
Well, you heard your own music coming out of a house.
It was so funny. Rob has been very instrumental in actually making me realize that this is legit and it's gonna go well. Like, you and Lindsay and Guy were really like, I always have confidence now, but I totally believe in what I'm doing, but there's always been this not unquantifiable like industry reason why I don't make, quote unquote, make it, and everyone being very positive and liking my work is I'm always like, yeah, me too, but I'm never gonna make it. And that's a really clunky phrase, but that's the best way to describe what I mean. But you guys were just so like, this is very special and this feels like this, and I sort of knew it, but also I'd never really had people that I admire the work of so much be like that back, and it was just very cool. And I got a big sort of enormous amount of validation finally, and it didn't really matter what happened. And truly letting go of whether or not it was going to work or not. And meant it did, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, I was walking down the road in Margate and heard it really loudly.
My windows were open.
It was
like May. Oh,
did you know it was his house? Or you just like, someone's ripped
off
my album before
it's yours?
Out.
But it was so loud and booming, and I just loved it. There's a picture of me on your doorstep just laughing my head off.
Yeah.
And that kept happening when that song first came out. Like, my parents live in a village in Rotherham, and my dad said they would, you know, light off bedtime, and they could hear it outside somewhere coming from like the pub car park, they thought. I'm just like, that is mental. That song, I knew I was really happy with it. Lots of people said don't put it out first. It was like, and you guys, our little hub in Margate, when I just made the record and I was just like playing it, people, was just so important, because it really gave me this like, I don't give a shit what happens, because I think it's brilliant.
I just remember sitting you down and saying, like, looking at you in your eyes like a square on, just going like, Rebecca, this is your time. You need songs. You might have written the whole album, but you now need to get back in the studio. Yeah. You were just like, you're crazy.
I loved it because you're so sincere in the way that I am, you know, and it's hard actually to find. And that's self-esteem, being a solo artist, is my life has pivoted, and I'm surrounded by people now that are artists, and they take art seriously, and they believe in it, and they're not, it's not like whatever, like, and that has changed my life. It changed my world, being able to, and I know Lindsay feels a bit the same. We grew up together essentially, and it was hard to be as sincere and as committed to what we're doing as we are without like people taking the piss.
Yeah.
And now I sort of don't have that. Now it's just this like absolute loving all the time about, and like ideas and creativity is celebrated, and it's not eyes on getting rolled at it.
Do you think there's anything, if this success were to come at a younger stage in your career, you might be a different person now? Is it good having this time to have, I guess, struggled?
Yeah, I think so. As much as I get fed up and I think, oh, if only in my 20s I would have been allowed to do this, what might have happened? That crosses my mind all the time, but I am on that tip, I don't know if you guys are, of like, the universe will send you what it's meant to.
Yeah.
And
but it's what you put out as well. Yeah. It's like this you were saying about how you suddenly stop hustling or chasing, and then it comes to you, because it's the energy is open and you're like, fuck it, I believe in this, I love this, I've got positivity around me, people who support me, who are good for my self-esteem, so let it be que sera sera, and then that energy comes to you, and that's when you're more prepared for it. There's no sort of desperation in it.
Yeah.
There's like, okay, cool, I can work with this.
I think I can't believe how true that is. There's summer in it, do you know what I mean? I'm like, I've always been like, oh, woo woo, whatever, you've got to. And I've had arguments with people that are like, just believe in yourself and it'll happen. I'm like, fuck off. You know, it's not like that. Yeah. And it is like, at the pandemic, I was like painting, making ceramics, writing, sort of thinking, I'm really lucky here. I'm an artist full time. I've done it and I can make ends meet and that's fine. Just get on with it. Stop moaning all the bloody time. And I really did realise that, like, it was enough. And the parts of me that wanted so much more were the parts that are on Instagram looking at, like, what's Rita Ora doing or whatever. And I'm like, that's not even really me. It's just, that's just all the fucking bullshit. So, yeah, I think being 35 and this happening is enabled that mindset, because I think you just naturally do start to be a bit like, oh, I can't be asked to be, like, bothered about everyone else for much longer. But also, yeah, I think the music sounds like it does, because I've lived quite a lot of a life already, and my 20s were pretty miserable, you know, for reasons that aren't that are society's problem. Like, it wasn't like too much me causing it. Now I see the pennies really dropping and going, like, of course that was very difficult to be a only girl in a band in the music industry, in an indie music scene, in the world we were in, which we're now realizing day by day was, like, very, very unfair and problematic. Like, so I don't know. Yeah, the music sounds like it does because I'm who I am. And I only get sad when sometimes I'm like, oh, I wish I, you know, I get ageist shit is happening, you know.
Yeah.
But then I think that's a good thing in a way. That's why it's important I exist. I just really want to exist so completely, because that's apparently quite radical.
And for those who listening who don't know your previous career, in a way, because it was like a whole different era, different type of music in many ways, and it was called Slow Club, and it was a joint project with another musician, and you made some really critically acclaimed, very popular records. You toured the world. You even made the most amazing documentary at the breakdown of the relationship, which honestly was the reason that I started saying to you that what you were doing was pop art or art pop, even though loads of Lady Gaga fans didn't like that, because they were like, she's not art pop, that's Gaga. But I was trying to say that, like, watching that documentary of the breakdown of Slow Club, it's like the last tour you went on, I think, and there's just the way the guy who films it shot you, it was like you were some kind of, like, Warhol character, you know, like,
how do we watch that, how does one watch
it? You can stream it, you can actually pay for it, I think it's on Vimeo and, like, maybe Apple and different
platforms.
Yeah, I think
platforms. It's like a fiver. It's called Our Most Brilliant Friends.
Yeah, Our Most Brilliant
Piers
Friends.
Dennis made it. It was meant to be just like a rock doc, like, But he's an amazing filmmaker and just couldn't not capture the fact that I was, like, unbearably sad. And the nature of those sort of... And art, and what is art, and what is, if you're not... We weren't making money. We weren't growing. Our audiences weren't getting any bigger. And I was creatively unfulfilled. And it's like, why am I doing this? And it was just this, like, duty in this way that we couldn't speak to each other. We never spoke to each other. We still haven't, like... And he sort of captured that, I guess. But also, there's another lens to look at it, which is just like, I'm whinging all the time. I'm the vibe kill. I'm like, these other people are happy and I want it to be something it isn't. And I like that. But that's what I like about art. Like, I don't want to see ambivalent, like, stuff. I want to see real horrible truth. And I was really glad that the documentary is quite uncomfortable and quite sort of sad.
There's just moments in it where, like, you're on the tour bus and there's this shot that's so beautiful. It's like, it could be an art installation of you, like, almost in silhouette, just sort of in your thoughts. Yeah. And you can really sense that you're trapped in this tour bus, that you just want to, like, fly almost as, like, a pop star. And the thing is, the work you were doing was so good. Like, Slow Club was really outstanding.
Yeah. Was you locked into a contract then?
No, it's more just like, we met when we were 16 and, like, and what had happened over that decade, I don't know if you guys ever went through it, but, like, it happened in my band, it happened in my personal life, it happened everywhere for me, which was this idea that, like I was saying, like, my dramaticness, my too muchness, my wanting to make art so much and really commit and go there was just a bit, like, lame to everybody. My need for success was pretty lame. My, like, Or at least it felt like it was. And just even stuff like the, you know, self-esteem we all wear, it's like really thought out what we wear. And that's always been like an arm of it for me. I couldn't in a million years get anyone to, like, wear something or, like, discuss what we might do aesthetically. Videos were always, like, too different. We were just two different artists trying to make, trying to make something we united on when we were teenagers. And then we were 28 trying to still do that. But the problem was I couldn't say anything. Like, if I can communicate like I can now, things might have been different. And I think for the rest of the band, it would have been too, right? No one was like a baddie, but it was very, like, bad for my brain because I was predisposed anyway to be like, oh, I'm probably wrong. I'm probably too much. Don't worry about it. Like, I should probably shut up. Like,
what, your ambition was sort of mugged off in some ways? Or...
Yeah, because it kind of, indie music in those years, it wasn't cool to want to be massive. It's weird now because it sort of, in a way, I'm the pretentious twat of my own making now because I'm like, oh, I want to be massive, but I also really want to make work that's important and matters. And that's actually the enemy of like global mega stardom, it turns out. So it's funny. I'm like, oh, we actually were on the same page in many ways, but the art was just too different. And it sent me, it sends you crazy if you can't be yourself, right? That's, time after time, that story is told and you behave in a way that isn't you because you just, everything just felt so difficult because I just couldn't say, I want it to look like this, sound like this, feel like this.
I remember Lindsay saying to me, you have to wait until you see Rebecca play live, because my experience of you was just through the audio, like I hadn't actually seen you perform. And then when I watched the documentary and you're on stage and people are heckling you and your responses are so quick and so funny and you've got this real brave kind of bold attitude when you're on stage, and I couldn't believe it was the same person, because I even said to you at one point, come and do a gig at Carl Friedman Gallery, and you were like, really? Oh, thank you. And it was way before the album had come out, and afterwards I thought, how ridiculous that I asked you to do that.
I still would.
No, I know you would, but it was just, I didn't realise like what it was going to blow up into, because your live shows are so extraordinary.
It's cool now. It's a Ryla. I love it. Like, it really is just a celebration every time, and it is a bit like I said earlier, like, people say, oh, it's really radical. And I'm like, no, it isn't at all. It's just that I'm a woman, honestly. And it's just that they're women too. And we're not really doing anything that mad, but we aren't. It's not sexy for male gazey. It's like sexy for us or like angry for us. Or it's all for me and latterly, like the band. And I guess that's radical. Unfortunately.
But the thing is, as well, it's not radical really, because like the audience coming to it, there's so many people finding your music and learning the words and like taking it into their hearts that like that's a hell of a lot of
that
people.
Must feel incredible when people sing your song back. I mean,
it's so good, but I'm also like, oh, everyone's depressed too. Poor freaks.
So we keep mentioning Lindsay and Guy and they feel fundamental to your kind of friendship group and to your growth and development and security in yourself. Who the hell are Lindsay and Guy?
Lindsay Mendick, best artist. You've had her on, right?
Yeah.
You've had Guy on, right?
Yeah.
And Guy, her partner, they both just... I've known Lindsay. We were in Sheffield together 2012, like I met her. Is that 10 years? Oh, is that mad? Yeah, and she was doing art and I was still in the band. And Lindsay taught me to be fabulous, right? I remember her introducing me to like Prosecco. And like, oh, come on, darling, it's fabulous. And I was like, yeah, it is fabulous. And I do deserve to be fabulous. Like, everything about my 20s was like this weird mix of, I'm really sorry that I exist at all. And I know this is going to be a nightmare for you to have to handle. But then also like being brilliant. Like, there was absolutely nothing fucking wrong with me. And it was just this horrible constant mix. And Lindsay has had the same shit, I think, from people for years, because she is, you know, we aren't diminutive little ladies that give you womanhood in its edible little pockets, you know, like we are what we are, and it makes good art, but it maybe sometimes isn't what so people want from ladies, and we're still fucking fighting that all the time.
You feel that all the time?
Yeah. I still get people being like, they write about me, oh, sweary self-esteem. And I'm like, do you say sweary?
Liam Gallagher.
No, you don't. No. You don't say, and still I get reviews about what I'm wearing, about what I'm saying, rather than the music or the show itself. And I was like, that's what keeps me going in a way. I'm like, I'm a bit knackered and I'm a bit like, I could just stop now. And like, I've proved my point. That one album's done dead well. Like, what a way to go. Like, leave it. I, for as long as it feels like I'm in any way, isn't she different? I'm like, no, I'm not. Loads of us are like this. Like, and it's just like, I feel like women are allowed to exist a bit, but not much yet. And that's why I'm just, I don't know, going to bang this drum a bit longer.
And on your first record, Compliments Please, there's an amazing song called The Best, and you and Lindsay actually collaborated. So the music video is actually an artwork.
Yeah, her and Paloma Proudfoot had a show at, what's the gallery now? In
Hannah Barry Gallery, was it?
Hannah Barry, yeah, we're Hannah Barry. And it just Lindsay's art is always really aligned with me. We are very similar, that's why. Like, I've always really, she taught me about affordable glamour and like the idea of a meal deal. Being like luxury, pleasure, fabulousness is like you can make your life as fabulous as you can in the moment, right? Like, so it's not about money, it's about like picking you and what you want to do in that moment really like changed my shit, because I think I always thought I couldn't do that. So there was that exhibition had like ceramic meal deals and things like that, and a bed, and it was just perfect for the song. The Best is about me saying like, I don't know what to tell you, mate. I did the best that I can, and that's obviously not good enough, and I'm sad about that, but I'm also not sorry. Like, and that exhibition really sort of summed that up. So
you filmed it amongst the exhibition?
Yeah, so I did this contemporary dance thing with my choreographer, Stuart, and we did it in amongst it all. And it's my favourite video, that, still to this day.
I know, the beginning when you're in bed.
Yeah.
And you're
under
the sheets and you're looking to the camera. Yeah. It's brilliant.
I really loved it. I want to do another one.
Are you? What is it like being best friends with a visual artist like that? And coming up and having both success at the same time.
It's so cute. I don't think it's so sweet. I just think about it as well. There's this moment we sat on, Lindsay had a studio in Sheffield, and I'd moved home because I was just so skin and everything, and I was so unhappy. And I took like I just went and sat on the steps. I remember her being like, we're gonna fucking do it. We're gonna do it. And she, her belief. And I was like, yeah, actually, why can't I think that? And it was really the start of my brain changing and realising I can be anything I want. And so much of my life had just been this, like, shape-shifting. And trying to just be, I just felt like if I could do what everybody else wanted enough, I'd make it or I'd survive. And then the way Lindsay, she's stuck with the same affliction, which is like, maybe I can be what everyone wants, but probably not. and choosing you and in the way that she does was the start of my, you know, doing it for me as well. But it's I'm so excited by her career. And also I am just the biggest fan, like, of her work. Like, it's absolutely amazing. And it gives me everything I want from art every fucking time. And so it's really good for me, because music is obviously my medium, but I do a lot of things around it and a lot of things go into the songs beyond the music, and she's a really great sounding board. We just ring each other and talk at length about the minutiae of like some idea we've had, and it feels really like it's genuinely important to my work.
Wow.
And then I think that she enjoys listening to my work when she's making stuff, and I hope I inspire her too. Like, it is very, like, special to me. And I'm always like, there'll be documentaries, darling. there'll be chapters in books about the Mendick Taylor Alliance. Because it does feel like we are these, like, little rotters trying to make sense of it all. And there's an audience that are also little rotters too.
There are.
were her ceramics something that inspired you to make your own ceramics?
Outside of music, you are a maker.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So you write music, you perform, but you are.
Yeah, that helped me actually. That was a shift as well to get. I had a fucking horrible boyfriend in 2012 who loved contemporary art. You know, he was a contemporary art guy, and all we did would go to galleries, and he wouldn't speak. We wouldn't discuss a single thing. He would make me feel really fucking stupid every time. And now I see it was part of the... He was like classical, abusive, horrible bastard. But it was part of the, you know, keeping me down thing was to, like, the only social thing we did was go to galleries, go to exhibitions. He talked to everybody else but me about the work. And now I see it, like, it's for everyone. That's the MO of this, isn't it? It's like, it's not this exclusive... And the people that make you think it is are the dickheads of the industry. Like... And me and Lindsay and Matt Sophie and going to being around artists and going to galleries without that arsehole taught me like that, you know, idea into fruition is art, right? And that's all it can, all it has to be sometimes is that, rather than my career had been like, could this song get on Radio One? Like, it's always had this agenda, but never was it like, I've had this idea and I've made it. And that's what I love about fine art, right? So they all taught me that, and in my own steam. And when I get a bit disillusioned, I do like Marina Abramovich's biography. I'm like, I just read that again, because it's like, oh, the amount of her work that was just like an idea to fruition without any agenda of like what that's going to do for her career or like next, what's next.
It's funny you mention it, because when you were talking about your ex-bandmate, it made me think of Marina Abramovich and Ule.
Yeah, yeah.
And how they then come together in that moment when she's at MoMA for her piece and they're staring at each other. Yeah, and it's, I can imagine, I mean, I don't know your ex-bandmate, but I can imagine in years' time there will be, you come together again.
Yeah, I'd be up for it. I'd be up for a show, but the parts of me that want to go, let's have this out on camera, let's talk about this, but he won't, you know, so.
So Marina Abramovich, I know that The Artist Is Present, that whole body of work that she did and in MoMA was really key for you. So why Marina, and what was it that spoke to you about her?
Sometimes I think I'm being really, well, this again, I'm proving my bloody point here, but I'm like, oh, Art 101, Marina Abramovich, do you like her, do you? And you're 35 woman. I think I'm being like dead basic. But of course she did. It's the confidence in that what I just described of like, there is something about that performance art in that way that's like, she could tell you what it means and what it's all about and why, but she doesn't. And it's just the act of doing it is the piece, right? And when it comes to songs and music and all of this, everything I make, I get such peace and quiet, but also like adrenaline and like a sort of high from creating. And the thing that kills the enemy of all that is the, will it get on this playlist? What will that mean? Like, will so-and-so like it? And to approach my work without thinking about that, I have to really like pretend I am literally Marina Abramovich, who I can't imagine would have been like, will this get on this? Will this get, I might be wrong, but like, I assume back at the germination of every idea, you're just not thinking about that. And that's what, you know, a lot of art gives me, and when I do get bogged down in it, I really have to pull back and go back into that world a bit, and because it, there's something about the simplicity, and maybe it isn't that simple, but it feels to me as simple to just focus on what you need to make rather than what the life that has beyond it.
Yes. Yeah, so it doesn't sort of stop you from creating.
Yeah.
It frees you up.
Yeah.
But that's so interesting. So you think about Marina as a way of like, she's a kind of someone that's done it right. So
yeah, I literally go, what would she do?
What would Marina do?
Yeah.
She's your conduit to creativity.
And it's all my interpretation of her. I don't know, but I'm just from reading and like watching it, like, all the things and loving the work. But she has that confidence and that like, this obviously, she's like tall and she's like domineering, and she's also, I love how she feels things and that, but it doesn't feel like they defeat her. It's all sort of data and content and work. So I'm a very emotional person. Everything fucking bothers me all the time.
Yeah.
And being able to go like, but that's a good thing. And that's my place on earth. And that's where my work will come from, and mining that, it helps other people, I guess, it seems, ish. Like, that, yeah, I feel really... But do you know what I mean?
When it comes to the actual making, then, of, like Rob mentioned the ceramics during lockdown, what are you drawn to materiality-wise when you are being creative outside of songwriting?
I'm obsessed with... So I paint just my body, but I make it weird. I'm so obsessed with my existence, like, and the ceramics, I like to make versions of me that's like nude, but then like I've got like long tentacles, or like, no, like I sort of don't have toes or fingers or anything. Like, there's this mix for me of, a lot of my 20s were defined by like how sexy I am and what a fit bitch I am and look at what my body does, and like this weird obsession with myself and the validation from others about it. That now I think when I paint or make ceramics, I'm just obsessed with like skewing and ruining what might be enjoyable about my body for other people. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yes.
That's what I get. Same with photos and things like artwork. I want there to always be just this one thing off, so like straight men can't enjoy it too much. which is maybe an insane thing to say.
But the gays will love it.
Yeah, well, yeah, but and also just that thing of like, my life has been this like, don't get kidnapped, don't get killed, don't draw attention to yourself, because that's all that's going to happen to you. I know that sounds mad, but that's the kind of vibe that my life has had of just like, don't draw attention to yourself and you'll be safe. But then I've got this great big body, I've got this great big head, I've got this voice I have to sing with, I've got all these things. And it's always like, those two things have just been forever, and it's made me insane. Yeah. And so all my art, I like to sort of go, here's my big sexy body, but here's also how fucking disgusting I am with it. And I want to say both, because the goal from childhood to now was always just like, be as lovely as possible.
Be girly, and
you'll
be, I guess.
Yeah, and you'll be all right. And then also don't be too girly or too pretty, because then it's just this constant like, and I just really love celebrating how rotten I am. And we all are. But also, I know I'm really fit as well.
You are?
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So, but I really want to break down the ceramics then. You buy a bag of clay?
Yeah.
What do you work with? Plaster? Where
just
do you buy
clay.
It from?
I've not gone too far in yet. It's just like air dry clay.
Where'd you buy it from?
Actually, Sophie, my ex-girlfriend, sent me it because
bag of clay.
Yeah, it's the most gay thing ever, but we sat on Zoom and would make ceramics together.
No way.
Really? It was still very tight. Yeah. So,
like ghost.
Very like Zoom ghost.
Right.
But Lindsay, digital I really ghost. Want to go in with Lindsay and do proper like stint at like doing it a bit more properly. And I really love being able to, again, it's a brain to fruition thing that nothing makes me feel safer or like higher. Like I'm just like, it's the best feeling in the world. And also it's where I can do whatever I want without someone saying, is that about me or being mad with me or sending me a big text message? Like everything in my life, I'm always so worried about everyone else.
But what people think your music's about them.
Yeah, but that's why songs make me very excited, because I don't really say what I mean. I never have a go at people really. I never push back, always saying sorry, and I'm not being like poor me about that. It's a flaw of mine. But in songs and art, like you don't have to, because the nature of it is you don't have to say what it is, right? That's why I love it.
I've always liked your lyrics as well, because I think you call people out for things they've done to you, but then you also call yourself out.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, I did this wrong, which I felt was quite recently, like I've never really heard that in pop music before, because normally it's like I'm angry with you and you did this to me and poor me, but I'm amazing or something, you know, I'm strong or I can get through this. With your lyrics you're like, I was really shit to you, I'm an idiot, I'm a dickhead, and then you're like, but you're also a dickhead and you've done this to me, you know. And I love that's
humanity like so much of our culture is obsessed with right and wrong, and I actually think there's rarely right and wrong, like again, but like there just sort of isn't, and I think that's where we're just walking around so stressed out, aren't we, and everyone should just be allowed to exist. and say when they're wrong, when they feel they would have done something differently. Or I'm obsessed with absolving myself of my bullshit. But you'll never get that. But also, I'll never get justice for some of the fucking shit that's happened to me. Mm. And I suppose the songs, it just like helps me just, like I said, feel safe enough to say it and then it's out. It's not like it's not catharsis in like,
it's not in
that as simple as that. It's just more like, it gets it out of my brain and then it's there and it exists. I don't feel any better for it, but I do feel like at least I'm not sitting on it and just apologising for my existence.
Does that energy go into these ceramics then? You say you have like a piece when you're making them.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, now that object's in the world, does it? Yeah. Do you look at that and is it imbued with memories, with stuff?
Yeah, good question. It's just more, it's like an extra arm to what my point is all the time. And it's a really small arm of it, really. And same with painting, same with poetry or all these things. The song is always like the main vehicle, but everything else is like this like extra pamphlet to my point. And I suppose I am obsessed with just being understood because I don't know, I feel like no one's ever fucking listening, you know? So yeah, all of it just helps me. But ceramics and paint, really, because I'm not, there's no market for it, and it's just for me, really, so far. Like,
where are they? Are you looking?
They're just all in market.
There's a quote you've said, my dream is to buy a big, lovely house and fill it with all my stuff that I've made.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like, I just want to,
But it's sort of, you want to be surrounded by your own work. Which, I mean, but it's lovely because obviously you care about it and you like it.
Yeah.
You've got to like it and the fact that you want to live with your own stuff. And some artists would be like, get it away from me. It's almost conceptual. I've made it. It's gone. Let it out in the world. But you want to hoard it. You want to archive it.
Yeah.
You want to exist.
And my record's playing.
Do you listen to your own music?
Yeah. I love listening to my new, anything new I've done.
Yeah, of course.
Like,
yeah.
Over and over. But also, I'm relaxed. I don't know if you get this, but, like, everyone else's stuff, it just stresses me out because I'm like, could have done that, should have done that, I'm better than that, I'm shitter than that. Just don't really want to know what everything else is like. I just want to live in a safe world where I know what's coming next. I've just realised that's a mad thing.
No, it's good. It's, but, it's, I guess it's, this is the safety you've been looking for as well.
But it's good to push through that. Like, I've got to. I'm reading books now because I'm going to write a book and I'm like, it's important to get an idea of what everyone else is doing and not just be my own feedback loop. But I think it's a reaction to, you know, 10 years of it was never about me. It was never, you know, I've never been able to enjoy anything I did. Everything was a fight. I think this is just this, safety and peace and stability in my work that maybe will stop being so intense once I'm like, still don't feel like I'm really here, you know, still feel like I'm trying to prove something. Mm.
Do you go to galleries now? I know you go to theatre a lot and art is important. And was there a period of being triggered going to galleries without this arsenal? But have you rediscovered the magic of galleries now, and how often do you go, and are there regular ones that you like going to?
Pandemic really fucked up, didn't it? But like, before, this is the thing I'm finding with being busy, is like, before I was this crazy busy, time would be spent, like, I'd go to, you know, always Tate, Whitechapel, you know, or those kind of things. Me and Lindsay would go to, you know, I always love when Lindsay takes me to anywhere, anything. And I get so much from it, but now, if I get a second, I sleep. And I'm like, actually, that is really not good for my brain. And I've kind of been appealing to management lately. I'm like, we do need to sort the diary out a bit because there are these I used to be bored and I'd feel boredom with cinema and art and theatre and things like that. And now I'm never bored. I'm always working. And it does make me think, God, the well's going to dry. Because it is, like I know I said about just enjoying my own shit, but that is where the
inspires your music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love seeing something and going, I love seeing something and thinking something. I love, and it can get a bit, as wonderful as my life is, surrounded by like-minded people now, it is good to pull yourself out of that and see other things and do other things.
So, I've had conversations with artists before and I said, your work really inspires my acting. And they've gone like, I don't understand how something on the wall can inspire your acting. It's like, well, it's just this connection to art. It's a connection to a feeling and a moment.
Yeah.
And then that trickles through you and that comes out in whatever it is your creativity is. So I can absolutely understand how, you know, well, music has been inspired for centuries by art,
by painting. Yeah, of course. And it's like, so, I mean, all of it, right, is just about communicating being alive. Is that right?
Yeah.
I think so. So anything creative and helps me validates why what I'm doing, or can sometimes like give me an idea, or I can hate it, and that's helpful too sometimes. Like,
and people do hate stuff, and that's a legit feeling, and that's allowed. And I think people giving people permission to dislike, to be angered by art is a feeling. The worst thing you can have is just like peripheral, oh, don't give a fuck at all, whatever. It does nothing to me.
Yeah.
To have that triggered feeling of like, why does it make me so angry? That pushes you somewhere.
It, it also shows you who you are. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've always thought about your ceramics, seeing them in your flat in Margate. I remember thinking, it's almost like you're trying to see yourself in a different way. So it's like, instead of looking at a photograph or hearing your voice singing, you were like trying to work out who you were through these kind of wonky, strange ceramics of yourself. I think, and they were quite full on. They're, they're quite expressive.
I need to see these. Yeah. Are you planning an exhibition?
Would
you?
Oh my God, one day we are doing that.
Yeah, I think it would be lovely to. I think, that, I mean, this is a bit of a tangent, but I do think, and I'm only just putting this together in my head now, really, but there's something to do with my body and the obsession with where, how big it is or how small it is or what, how it's working or whether or not it's attractive. That's where a lot of my art comes from, I think, because it's, I'm constantly wrestling with this. It doesn't seem fair that every day I have to think about that, and like, and I do still, and it sometimes it's overridden. Sometimes like the part of me that really wants to be thinner will like override the part that wants to just enjoy themselves and be themselves, and that like, but like I said about like being disgusting as well, I'm like, but ultimately still, and whatever my body looks like, I'm still going to be this artist after all. And God, this sounds a bit mental, but yeah, that's why I love just painting and making things in response to that and how my body is, and it isn't perfect, and for us that can be celebrated.
And actually, in your music video for I Do This All The Time, the thing that really touched me, because you'd made three videos all at once, and you shot them all in the same day. You directed it yourself.
At the Almeida Theatre, wasn't it?
Yeah, in the Almeida Theatre, And I remember us screening it before they'd even come out yet, and in sequence, you know, how you filmed them. It was amazing. And I always remember that moment when you hug yourself. Like you have like a second you come on and hugs yourself, and there's that real fragility and tenderness, and a bit sort of like you're going to be okay.
It's vulnerable.
I just loved that so much.
I was like, it's a bit on the nose, but it really is the point. And then, but again, that sort of taught me that like on the nose is sometimes great, like, and you need it to be on the nose, and it needs to make that much sense. But yeah, like that album really is the start of me going, do you know what? Come here, like you're not an arsehole. You're all right. You're just doing your best, and like you can learn. And I think, I've spent my whole life going, pushing that person away and being like, you're the problem. And I don't feel like I solve it on this record, but it's definitely like the germination of like, oh, it might be the answer to not hate myself. Like, and who's making me hate myself? It's not me. Society and all the other bullshit.
I also think the balance with humour, because humour is such a big part of your existence. And even in your music video for Moody, you included our Talk Art book, by the way, which I was very proud of.
Oh, yes, thank you.
That was so funny. I remember Lindsay said, you've got to watch the video. And I turned it on and I was like, oh my God. I was like the only person that noticed it.
You made us a Sunday Times bestseller.
Just thank you, Elsie. I'm just so giving.
You are so generous.
But that music video is hilarious. It's like almost like acting. You know, it's very, very comic. Mm. What's his name, the guy?
Alistair Green.
Alistair Green.
I just wanted to do a video like those tropes where like people meet, they fall in love and it's whirlwind, and then they fight, but then the sex is good, and then they ultimately break up. Like, We Found Love is my favourite music video of all time. I just always wanted to redo that.
Oh, what, with Rihanna?
But realistically.
So good, isn't it? Yeah.
So that was like the idea would be like... Because we're just still fed this idea that, like, somebody's going to change everything. Well, they fucking don't. Eventually, they get bored or annoying. Or you bore and annoy them. And then you move on. And, I was wanted to do just, like, a realistic music video tropes video. But, yeah, that was fun.
When was the last time you made actual art? You said that there's no time to be bored now, and you would fill that time with being creative and seeing other creative things.
have you been making or painting or
nothing?
When was the last time?
It's killing me. Before the record came out, I think.
Wow.
I'm still in Margate, yeah. It's been crazy. And like what I was just talking before the podcast, like, I do think it will start to ease. And I can feel now the void that I have from not being able to do something like that and what that does for me creatively in my brain.
Yeah.
So we're just going to have to... Come September, I'm going to hopefully, like... I want to schedule it in because it's important and get, like, a space in London and get back on with it.
You want to get, like, a studio, like an art studio?
I think so.
Love that.
That would be the dream, big dream, that. But that's why Margate's great, though, because, like... I can do it in my place, so we'll see. We'll have to see what happens.
But you're very vocal about making art outside of music, aren't you? And is it something that maybe will start appearing in videos? You'll have like your artworks in the background, and we kind of like little.
Yeah, I think I finally realised that I can do it all. I feel like Alan Partridge sometimes, but I can, you know. And you're discouraged from that in the industry because in a way it does a lot of people out of jobs, but. I can do every single bit of this if you give me enough time or budget. And I've got enough in my mind to do it. And I think I've always been, I've trusted everyone else's opinion. I still did on some things to do with the last record even. But I think going into this next era, essentially, within reason, I want to do it all. And it's possible if you just get listened to.
I just heard one of your new songs, which is a demo for the next record. Uh-huh. And the chorus is, I can't be arsed. And I just thought the joy in your voice, I cannot wait to hear you get back in the studio because you can really hear how happy you are singing. And your voice sounded the best I've ever heard.
Even though you're singing, I can't be arsed.
Well, no, that's not, so I love stuff like, these are like timestamps. That song is from my last relationship 2.5-3 years ago now. And I'm writing about that person on Process Pleasure, but that's like the last, that song you've just heard is like, I just remember thinking, it's too hard and I can't be hard. And I kept saying that, I kept going round in my head. And I like to sort of pepper, like I say that in the music video for Moody. I like to sort of like breadcrumb what's coming next, I guess. Finally, we had a bit more time with the string quartet than I thought we were going to have. And I was like, oh, could you just do this? And that's come out. And album 3 has begun now. And I'm very glad to hear that you think it's good because I was like, who knows what I'm on about here. But yeah, like I just want to carry on where I left off, really. Mm. I hope it's like less about that person. I think it will be.
Mm. What was the art scene like growing up in Rotherham?
Well, there kind of wasn't one, but then I did have this T-shirt that said Rotherham is the new Berlin that this magazine had, and I used to wear it all the time because I just really loved it. And that was just before I met Lindsay, and I did meet a few arty like lads in bands that were, you know, they're not the most amazing gateway, but I did start to sort of get an idea of there was an art scene in Rotherham, but it was mostly just like lads with guitars. So that wasn't that helpful.
But was it, have they got an institution there or galleries?
I don't believe so, no. But then it was like S1 Gallery in Sheffield became like a big sort of part of my
course.
Life.
Yeah.
And then Lindsay and everyone around that.
Because that was a studio complex as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you all ended up hanging out there a lot.
We did a lot of that. I remember Lindsay did a thing where she made all this food from, you know, like 70s cookbooks, so like blancmanges and things like that. And I remember going to that. I just met Sophie and we went together. And
this is all in ceramics, by the way, if people are listening.
Sorry.
It wasn't like she just
did no, she
the
catering. Made food.
Oh,
she
did she?
She made food and her mum made food and it was this big, like, mad banquet. And I remember going to that thing. And you know when you start to go, oh, I'm an adult now and this is, like, the life I kind of dreamed. I thought, I'm going to this gallery to do this stupid sort of thing in a way. It was like, that's what I've always loved about Lindsay, is like committing to the bit, like, and then there was karaoke afterwards, obviously.
Of course.
And I was just like very that was felt like the start, that time in my life was the start of me being myself and being around people like that, because I've always wanted to be, I love to have an idea and just do it. That's what Lindsay makes me so excited every time I'm ever anywhere near her, because you can be like, should we do this, and she's like, yeah, fuck it. And it's like, I know, that's life to me. That's the best thing about life.
She's incredibly generous as well. You both have a generosity spirit and you feel like you gift yourself. Like, you've been here today. You're so generous. And Lindsay's like, Lindsay made me a birthday present of this ceramic pot with her boyfriend's dicks all over it.
Oh.
I've seen images. I haven't got it yet. And his ears on it, which is magic. But that's like, you have this sharing of art and it feels important to have that. kind of trade-off with each other and with people that you respect and really like what they do as well. That feels really important.
Yeah, I mean, actually, overall, that's all that matters. I love to just, I think I was quite a lonely kid and like quite lonely teens and 20s, really, like, sharing it is my favourite thing. The more, like, opportunities I get for theatre stuff and I'm like, my choreographer could come along and do that and the girls in the band could be in that and, like, genuinely, I'm not being like, I'm so nice, but, like, that's what gets me off. Freebies from fashion people, I'm like, what size shoe are you? Do you want these? Like, I just, just feels, that's the joy of life to me, not... But it's funny, isn't it? When I was really... wasn't allowed to do what I wanted and always being sort of talked down to, I had a much bigger ego and was much more obsessed with myself and what I needed and what I wanted to look like. I wanted to look fucking cool. I wanted to look hot. I wanted to make you fancy me. I wanted all these shitty things about my personality. I was jealous. Like, all those things were really rife when I wasn't just allowed to be. Now I'm allowed to just be. I kind of, like, don't really have problems with that anymore. It's amazing. It's just like human nature. Let everyone just be who they are and then you'll get a lot less... conflict and shit.
I've noticed that. I mean, compare and despair growing up when you are ambitious and you want a career and you look around and then if I didn't get that role, this other actor always got that role. Yeah. And then you get to a point, you're like, I mean, obviously you settle in your career and you feel like established and you go, okay, I'm in my groove now. Mm. And you don't get knocked by anything. But when you're younger, you absolutely feel like, it's this thing where people say, when someone else's success happens, you feel like they've taken up your space. Mm. And so, no, they've not taken up your space. There's all this other space you can take up.
Yeah.
But you do. The instant reaction is that, oh, shit, they're there. I can't move into that gap now. They've taken up that gap.
That's such a... I've only just noticed recently that, like, oh, I just don't really think like that anymore. Yeah. Now and again, I get these daft... But it's usually not about the people. It's about... Yeah, like me being older or all those kind of annoying things that you can't change. Like, but for the most part, like, who I am now is, like, the negative, nasty shit that's sent to rule my life, it just sort of went as soon as I was allowed to just be myself.
So nice.
It's like that, I want to preach that, actually, more than anything. That's what I'm on about.
Preach, absolutely. Right. So Marina Abramovic, big art hero. Queen is a huge hero, and you've got... Your logo is based on a Freddie Mercury signature.
when I first got a logo, I said I wanted it to look like Freddie Mercury's signature. And it's still, if in doubt, what would Freddie Mercury do as well as my other one? But he even, like, as a kid, I was very obsessed with Freddie Mercury and really focused on it. And my dad had this VHS with all the videos on, and we would watch.
Wow.
I would just watch it for over and over and over. And Peter Gabriel over and over and over. And just, like, and now you look at it and you're like, these... you know, groundbreaking sort of artists really doing what came into their mind and they made it. It was back in the day when there was people bought music and stuff like that, it was a bit more of a buoyant business. The art was a bit more exciting because no one wasn't just trying to get on playlists and, you know, get Instagram deals. That's the, I always look to that sort of era where, yeah, they wanted to be big and successful and have hits, but there was so much more creativity because it wasn't such a small... sort of thing you could small gap in the market to be able to thrive.
Would you want to do an Adam Lambert and sing with?
Oh God, yeah.
That's the dream.
Oh well, my dream actually is Peter Gabriel always as a female singer.
Kate Bush.
Yeah, Kate Bush did it, and Paula Cole did it, and his daughter does it now, I think. And I've said it so many times and still have not heard a peep. But one day, like, I know it all already. I grew up watching the Paula Cole tour, and she's wearing Doc Martens and a black dress, and it just, like, still defines my life. So, yeah, that's the dream, actually.
Who were the other art heroes then? Marina?
Marina, Lindsay.
Tracy Emin, yes.
Marlena Dumas.
Yes.
I really, really love, like, that really helps my poetry. Jenny Holzer, like, I'm always just like, if in doubt, just make it, like, that is so, actually,
direct.
I love direct, really, like, I love Laurie Anderson, like, so much, and in doing loads of, like, watching her live shows, because I'm, like, working with someone who she's worked with a lot, and I'm like, oh my God, right, so this means, like, because I want to take, like, live pop shows into a world that hasn't been looked at for a bit.
Well, into performance art in some ways.
Yeah.
Because
I think people can handle it. Self-esteem fans certainly can. So, and it makes me excited.
We need it.
Yes, it's coming. It's coming.
So, we ask every guest three very important questions. And the first one is, if you could do an art heist, you could have any work of art in the world for yourself, what would it be and why? And maybe you'll just steal something of your own collection, put it back in your house.
Yeah.
I don't know. Shit. What do I want? What would you get?
Frida Kahlo's My Birth.
Okay. It's something Jenny Holzer, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah. Shit, I sound dumb. I don't know.
No, I love Jenny Holzer.
Yeah. I don't know what specific
I love all those marble...
one of those. Yeah.
That have text on them, like truisms on them.
Yes, one of them.
Yeah, they're really beautiful. And the other question we ask is, what is your favourite colour? And today you're wearing like cerulean blue.
Yeah, I think a sky.
You're the Devil Wears Prada cerulean blue.
Yeah, this is a good little bit of kit, this, isn't it? Yeah.
Triumph.
This boy stopped me on the tube and he went, "Wow." And I was like, "You're on mushrooms, aren't you, mate?" He like couldn't believe it. Like,
you're the sky, but you're walking.
He was definitely having a lovely time. I think blue, like a good sky blue. Yeah.
And what's the best advice you ever received when it comes to your art?
Oh my god.
And I guess this can be music and visual arts.
I recently sat down with Richard Hawley, who told me just to do it for me and enjoy it for me. Because it's all like that. It's really simple, but like that is. I was asking him, how have you retained the sort of? He's so legit, his career, and it's so fucking good, and you don't see him on everything going, and that stresses me out. I'm like, I should be saying yes to everything, and he was just like, the music is what you. That's the engine. Like, focus on that. And I was like, oh yeah, I don't need to be a mastermind.
Sometimes the weakest link, or
it's very hard to say no.
Simplest things are the hardest to know, though. It's really odd. It's like you get so caught up in everything, you can't see what is so glaringly obvious.
Yeah, it is all of these opportunities and things that are happening now. Like they come from the music, so that's the thing I've got to make sure to
trust the music.
Well.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing.
Well, thank you for doing talk art.
Oh my god,
you might not do mastermind, but you can do talk art. Love that.
I was going to do celebrity best mind, and I said I wanted Marina to be my specialist subject.
Oh wow!
And they said I couldn't do that, and then I said, okay,
"Why
drag
couldn't
race.
You do it?"
Because I think someone else had or something, and then I couldn't do drag race because someone. I was like, "Well, I don't know anything about anything else."
You got Marina Bravitz on drag race.
That's
fine.
Me done. Okay, right. Done. Sorry, I'm afraid I can't come on. Thank you.
Well, give us one fact of Marina Abramovic then that we should know about. You're running away. Oh, okay.
Smoke too much weed.
Oh my god, that's so funny. Well, for everyone listening, you can go to @selfesteem on Instagram. Or is it?
It's self-esteem.
Oh no, self-esteem. That's right.
That's a lot of self-esteem.
It's a lot of self-esteem.
Self-esteem.
Too much anything.
Instagram.
Look at me now, I'm a monster.
Prioritize Pleasure, Rebecca's latest album, is out now, and your current single, You Forever, is actually like on the Radio 1 playlist and all these playlists.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, man.
It's totally. Like,
I'm hoping it's going to be on Love Island.
And even Elton John played it on his.
Is that
show,
a good thing
he?
To be? Is that something?
Apparently.
I guess, yeah, you're right. Or a TikTok.
Yeah, man. I'll get it. Oh, don't talk to me about that. That's a whole other podcast.
Oh, yeah. And also, read Rebecca's article she wrote for The Guardian all about TikTok and how unfair it is that record labels mistreat their artists, encouraging
unpaid
them
digital
to do
interns.
Stupid marketing that is irrelevant. And also, this summer, you're going to be at loads of music festivals. So, if you just go on Google, you will find Self Esteem. You must see the live show. It's extraordinary. Rebecca Lucy Taylor, Self Esteem.
We love you.
And also, I want to publicly thank you for singing karaoke on New Year's Eve in my front lounge.
Oh, anytime.
I had a pop star in my front lounge.
I'll see you there again this year, probably.
Total dreams come true.
Yeah, we're doing Margate for New Year this year.
Fair,
yeah,
great.
We'll be hanging
out. I'll never forget as well, jumping up and down to We Need to Be Braver.
Yeah.
We were like jumping up and down together. It was so major. We'll be back very soon. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Bye, Rebecca. Bye.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamond and Russell Tovey.
Follow us on Instagram @TalkArt, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in today's episode, with music by Jack Northover.
Subscribe to Talk Art at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts.
Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.